I'm Todd McKay.
And I'm Franco Terrazano.
And this is the Canadian Taxpayers Podcast. We're dedicated to lower taxes, less waste, more accountable government. But before we get into the show, I've got a little favor to ask. We've got a survey link in the show notes because we want to know what we can do to make the show better. What do you like? What don't you like? Tell us. Click on that survey link. It'll only take you a couple minutes, and then we're going to try to make the show better for you. But now, to get on with the show, in this episode, we're going to talk about Bill Morneau bailing out as finance minister. We're not going to get into all the rumors of who likes who and who doesn't like, whatever. There's a lot of other places where you can read all about that. We want to take a deep dive into the finance minister's fiscal record. Spoiler alert, it's not great. And in Waste Watch, union bosses in Ontario are making big contract demands for teachers that just, listen, they're not affordable. But even the negotiations, just to sit down and talk, is costing taxpayers a lot of money. We're going to get into that.
But before we get into that, let's talk about the Fed's decision to extend the Canadian Emergency Response Benefit, which is also known as CERB.
Yeah, and listen, it's important to talk about these policies and their actual impact in the real world. And let me give you an example. So this weekend, I took my kids over to the Burger Cabin. It's this little place, serves burgers. The onion rings are unbelievable here in Moose Jaw. It's amazing. If you're in town, drop by there. There's a huge lineup. They're doing a great business there. But when I finally got to the window, after social distancing, all that, it's all outside. It's good on that front. But when I finally got to the window, there was a sign in the window, and it said that the Burger Cabin was closing because it doesn't have enough workers. Big lines, lots of business, no workers. And it's policies like CERB, that's part of the reason this is happening.
So through CERB, the feds are handing out $2,000 per month to Canadians whose jobs were impacted by COVID. And we recently heard that it's being extended by 4 weeks, and then employment insurance and some new programs are expected to take over.
And this is going to cost taxpayers a ton of money. And we'll get into that in a bit. But it's also making it hard for businesses, especially small businesses, to get their staff back to work. Dan Kelly over at the Canadian Federation of Independent Business, he talks about the impact for a lot of small businesses. And here's what he said. Every day, I hear from worried business owners that they're having troubles competing with the CERB to get workers. Franco, listen, you have a degree in economics. Break this down for us.
Well, Todd, I can tell you right now, you certainly don't need a PhD in economics to understand what's happening here. So let's break it down. The CERB gives you $2,000 per month. And let's say you're just starting out your career and you're making about minimum wage. Well, if you're working full time, you're only getting about $2,500 every month. So if you go back to work full time and you're not getting the CERB, well, then you're really only being paid an extra $500 for a month's worth of work. You know, and when we lay it down like that, it becomes pretty clear why people aren't rushing out of their bedrooms to get back to work here.
Yeah, and it's that kind of thing that's making it so that I can't take my kids for burgers and ice cream at the Burger Cabin. But it also, and much more importantly, it means that businesses aren't driving the recovery. We need those businesses running full out, but they're being held back. That's a big problem.
And Todd, you hit at a great point, right? And you're telling your story about the burger joint. And I know you're a bit of a burger connoisseur, so I know that's been hitting you hard. But that's just one burger joint. This might be happening to many small businesses, and we've heard stories of similar things happening to other small businesses. But here's another issue with CERB. So CERB allows people to make up to $1,000 per month and still receive the benefit. Well, I remember going through news stories and seeing people say that they've heard about people saying they're only willing to work until their pay reaches $995, so below that limit. So clearly CERB is creating negative incentives for people to get back to work, and it's creating negative incentives for people to get back to work full time.
Yeah, and that's a big problem because as we've been saying, we need businesses to be rolling. Now listen, we need businesses to lead us in this recovery, but that's going to be really tough if they can't get their people back to work. And it sounds like that's going to be an ongoing struggle because the feds are also lowering the bar for employment insurance. So the way it's going to work now is people only have to work 120 hours to collect a minimum of $400 a week for 26 weeks. You know, do the math on that. You work full-time for 3 weeks, and now you're entitled to $10,000.
Yeah, you know, I think it's easy when we kind of explain it like this to understand how this is impacting business, but it's also making things worse for younger Canadians. I want to read a quote from Christian Thomas. He's 23 years old, and he works for a bank in Toronto. And I stumbled across a op-ed written by Leisha Corbella. Well, here's what Thomas told Corbella of Post Media, end quote. "I'm concerned about the loss of productivity and motivation for young people right now. I don't want my generation to get comfortable on EI and get caught in a rut. A lot of people my age are returning home, living with their parents, and living rent-free while collecting $2,000 a month," end quote.
Man, that's a powerful message. He also told Corbella that he's concerned about the big debt tab that his generation is going to have to pay off. Listen, these students aren't getting any free money. They're just getting a bill for the future is really what's happening. The Canadian Taxpayers Federation, we've got a student organization called Generation Screwed. It helps educate students about Canada's government debt problem. And listen, CERB has already cost us about $70 billion. Extending CERB and the new EI assistance programs, that's going to run up the tab by another $37 billion. Listen, our deficit is already way more than $300 billion for just this year. The debt is expected to pass $1 trillion. That's trillion with a T, $1 trillion. Listen, our federal finances, they're a mess.
Yeah, they're a mess. And Todd, you know this as well as anyone. I mean, it's the younger generations, people like Christian Thomas, who will be left paying for all of this spending. And that's why it's so important for the Canadian Taxpayers Federation and our supporters to make sure that politicians are thinking about government debt before they make spending decisions. And we have a digital clock showing our debt going up in real time. And you can find that at debtclock.ca. So make sure to go check it out, but do more than just check it out. Make sure to share it with your friends and family to raise greater awareness in Canada about the big government debt problem that we have. And in the show notes, we're also going to post a link to Generation Screwed. So make sure to check that out as well.
All right, stick with us. Bill Morneau, he just bailed out his finance minister. Big shock to the cabinet. Again, lots of rumors going on. That's all fun. Enjoy that stuff. But listen, we got to look at his track record. How'd he do in the gig? It's not great. Stay with us. Time for Deep Dive. This is where we get deeper into important issues. And Franco, there's been massive news coming out of Ottawa. I think we've got to dive into it.
Yeah, and I think massive news is a bit of an understatement here because Bill Morneau has stepped down as federal finance minister, and he's also resigning his seat as a member of parliament. And we've heard that Chrystia Freeland will replace Morneau as Canada's new finance minister. Now, there's a lot of gossip going around right now on why Morneau resigned, but I don't want to talk about that. You can read that everywhere else in the news. You can hear about that everywhere else. What I think is important and what I think taxpayers need to know is Morneau's fiscal track record. Let's look at the facts. What did Morneau's 4+ years as finance minister mean for taxpayers?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot to unpack in his record as finance minister, but let's start in an obvious place. Morneau's small business tax changes.
Yeah, I mean, in the dead of summer in 2017, the feds proposed one of the drastic changes to the tax system in decades, and the feds wanted to ram it through in 75 days. Now, the proposed changes were all pretty complicated, but here's the high level. They would have cost taxpayers a lot of money and hurt many small businesses and family farmers big time. And I'm in Alberta, and I remember when the proposals were announced. And at that time, small businesses were struggling with a very hard economic downturn. So many small business owners lost their savings and already had to lay off their friends and their staff members. And I remember many small businesses telling me that they had no idea how they would survive another blow from the government. You know, and these small businesses, I mean, they're the backbone of the economy. They take so much risk and they felt targeted by Morneau and by the Trudeau government.
Yeah, so here at the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, we jumped into that fight. You know, the victims of these tax hikes weren't the billionaires on Bay Street.
these victims were people the government claims to be trying to help, small mom and pop shops in small towns across the country, lots of family farms, all those kind of folks. So we hosted town halls so the taxpayers could learn about the changes, what they mean, and air their grievances, have a voice over what's happening. We had petitions so people could sign up and take a stand. Our federal director, Aaron Woodrick, he was doing tons of media on this. We had a letter writing campaign. And then we kind of had a little bit of fun too. We did a stunt. We hired an airplane to fly around Parliament Hill with a banner that said, no small biz tax hikes.
And Todd, you know, our Canadian Taxpayers Federation supporters are great. And because they were so engaged and really gave it to Morneau, really amped up the pressure on the Trudeau government, they did ease off a bit. I mean, the end result certainly wasn't as bad as the original proposals. And, you know, and the feds moved forward with reducing the small business tax rate.
So another controversy that surrounded Morneau was a French villa. It seemed to have escaped his mind completely.
Ah, well, who hasn't forgot about their villa in the south of France? Am I right? Well, seriously, though, it took 2 years for Morneau to disclose a private corporation that owns his family villa in France, and that put him in some hot water. And this is what Conservative MP Pierre Poilievre had to say about it. Quote, I guess that he expects us to believe that he's so rich that he just forgot that he has a private corporation in France and a wonderful villa in Provence. End quote. And this controversy came to light during the same time Morneau was pushing his small business tax hikes. And that's important context, as former NDP ethics critic Nathan Cullen pointed out. Here's what Cullen said at that time. Quote, Morneau seems to have set something up which makes it easier for him to pass on his wealth to his kids, where they're proposing tax changes which make it harder for farmers to do the same thing. End quote.
Yeah, that's a pretty tough circle to square there for the former finance minister. Okay, let's shift focus slightly. We can't talk about a finance minister's record without talking about deficits and balanced budgets. Franco, how do you do with that?
Well, I think all Canadian taxpayers know the answer to that question. And it's not good. And I think that's being generous. Well, here's what Trudeau promised ahead of the 2015 election.
And what Canadians need are leaders who will tell them the truth. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. We are committed to balancing the budget in 2019.
Well, Morneau's own 2019 budget showed that he missed the mark by about $20 billion. And of course, that's 2019. So that's before COVID-19 hit. And COVID-19 then had nothing to do with that massive deficit. That was all before the pandemic when he missed the mark.
Yeah, and this is a perfect example why we need our finance ministers to be prudent, especially during good times. You never know what's going to happen. I definitely didn't see a pandemic coming. We need to make sure we're not spending ourselves broke during the good times, so we have a little bit of wiggle room, a little bit of cushion if something goes wrong. The Fraser Institute's done some really interesting research on this. It turns out the Fed spent more than $9,000 per person in 2019. Again, that's pre-COVID. After adjusting for inflation and population growth, per person spending was at its highest level ever in Canada. It was higher than during the Great Depression, during both world wars, during the 2009 recession, and that's accounting for inflation and population growth. Morneau spent the rainy day fund when the sun was shining.
Yeah, there's no way around this simple fact that the reckless deficit spending put Canada in a worse position to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic and the economic shutdown. And now we're face to face with a deficit that's going to be over $300 billion, the largest Canadian deficit ever recorded. We're going to pass the $1 trillion debt mark. That's $1 trillion with a T. You know, that's a one followed by 12 zeros after it. And all that money has to be paid back.
Yeah, those deficit and debt numbers are bad. They are very bad. But it kind of seems like the straw that broke the camel's back was Morneau's family ties with the WE charity. Cabinet rubber-stamped a decision to have WE administer a $900 million student grant program. Obviously, it had to backtrack on that, but in the meantime, Morneau failed to recuse himself before that decision happened, even though there were obvious close ties. Turns out WE had covered tens of thousands of dollars in travel expenses for Morneau and his family back in 2017. Eventually, Morneau wrote a check for more than $40,000 to cover those expenses and apologize.
I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Morneau's record for taxpayers is not good. Quite frankly, it's bad. There is, however, a small silver lining, and that's shortly before resigning, Morneau went on the record saying that the feds aren't considering tax hikes to deal with the COVID-19 budget challenges. That's the good news. And here's what Morneau said when he was asked about new taxes to pay for the massive surge in federal spending.
We're not thinking about raising taxes. What we're thinking about is preserving our economy for the future, making sure that we can actually get back to a vibrant place.
And even after Morneau quit, here's what Prime Minister Justin Trudeau had to say about higher taxes.
The last thing Canadians need is to see a raise in taxes right now. Millions of Canadians are out of work and looking for work. The economy is still nowhere near where we need it to be. We have work to do, and we are not going to be saddling Canadians with extra costs.
So the feds are clearly on the record saying they won't hike taxes. Now we need massive spending restraint in Ottawa. The Canadian Taxpayers Federation and her supporters are really going to need to hold the politicians in Ottawa's feet to the fire to make sure that we get back to a balanced budget without tax hikes.
Hi, I'm Scott Hennig, president of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. When we started this podcast, we honestly didn't know if anyone would listen. But now we're getting thousands of downloads each week. So first, thanks for listening. And second, I got a favor to ask. We want to know what you would do to make this podcast even better. We've got a link to a survey in the show notes. It's anonymous, and it'll only take a few minutes to fill out. And I guarantee it'll help us make a better podcast. So please, go to the show notes, hit the link for the survey. Thanks again for listening. Okay, now back to the show.
It's time for Waste Watch. This is a part of the show where we make fun of governments because they spend all our money on stupid stuff. So we're going to make fun of that. Jasmine, you've got a pretty good example today. What do you got?
Every parent in Canada right now is thinking about back to school, and maybe it's just because their kids are driving them crazy, but some are thinking about it because they're worried. Will it be safe with COVID-19? So today, I want to talk about some government waste in the education department involving Ontario teachers, since they've been very vocal, calling on the government to spend more on its back to school plan.
All right, I've got kids. I am definitely looking forward to dropping them off at school. But of course, you want to make sure everything's safe. So that's something everybody's keeping a pretty close eye on. But it's true, teachers' unions from across the country have been sounding alarm bells. They want more money going into schools right now. What do you say to all of that?
I'm no doctor. So on the question of safety, I'll defer to Ontario's Chief Medical Officer of Health, Dr. David Williams, and his office has approved the government's back to school plan. So that's all I'll say on that front. But when it comes to Ontario's teachers' union saying they're, quote, concerned that schools don't have enough money to reopen safely, I find that incredibly disingenuous, considering they had no problem watching the government waste money during their contract talks earlier this year.
Okay, so what exactly are we talking about here? I know the Ontario Teachers Union negotiated a raise during the COVID lockdowns, but is that what we're talking about here?
Oh, I'll get to that. But no, the waste I'm talking about happened well before they even reached a deal. In fact, even before they opened their mouths to start negotiating. Todd, I just found out through a Freedom of Information request I submitted that the Ontario government spent nearly $1 million over the past year during negotiations with teachers' unions on hospitality expenses alone. So that doesn't even include any of the bargaining costs, just all the stuff around the meetings.
Okay, so just the hospitality. So not the salaries for the negotiators, not the lawyers, not all the photocopying, all of that stuff. Just the hospitality was $1 million?
Exactly. $1 million wasted on food and fancy hotels so the unions could try to squeeze an even bigger raise out of broke taxpayers.
You know, and it's crazy because between unions and governments, they must have about 1 million meeting rooms that they could have just walked down the hall and used for free. So that's incredible. Just sitting down together cost taxpayers $1 million. kind of make social distancing like feel like a good idea. Like maybe we should do the next round by Zoom or something, see if we can save some taxpayer money.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so but let's talk about the breakdown. How in the world do you spend $1 million just to sit down and chat?
The Ontario government spent $814,000 of taxpayer money on hotel meeting rooms at the ritzy Sheraton Hotel downtown Toronto. The government spent $21,000 on staff meal expenses and $72,000 on staff accommodations when staff had to spend the night during negotiations.
Okay, so just so we're clear, do these numbers also include the teachers' union side? Are we paying for both sides of the negotiating table as taxpayers?
The government says no, that it didn't pay for costs incurred by the unions and that any shared meeting space, they split the cost. But that's actually an improvement for Ontario taxpayers. The last government in Ontario gave teachers' unions over $80 million for their bargaining expenses, and they didn't even bother to ask for receipts.
Yeah, that's crazy. When you're in a negotiation and you're paying the costs on both sides of the table and it's $80 million, it's insane that only getting it down to $1 million is a huge improvement. And the craziest part is, it's not like Ontario's got stacks of cash just sitting around. It's not like we're in some kind of boom and there's a bunch of money sitting around. Ontario's actually pretty broke. How big is the debt in Ontario right now?
Ontario is the largest subnational debtor on the planet. Our debt's approaching $400 billion this year. And that's why it's so shocking to me that Premier Ford even entertained the teachers' request for a raise. The province shouldn't be giving any of its employees a raise until the budget's balanced and our finances are back on track. It's as simple as that.
Okay, but let's play devil's advocate here. This is how negotiations work. Your side demands a bigger raise. My side says no. What's wrong with the teachers playing hardball and trying to squeeze out everything they can?
They absolutely have a right to ask for a bigger raise, and taxpayers have the right to say no.
Okay, so let's get back to the original question. You're saying that it's disingenuous for the teachers' union bosses to say the government should have spent more money on its back-to-school plan. Why do you say that?
Because the $1 million that the government just spent on hospitality expenses during negotiations with them could have been spent on safety measures in classrooms and schools. Also, the government-wide raise that teachers quietly accepted in the middle of a pandemic just cost taxpayers $720 million. And I'll point out, that's more than double the $300 million the government allocated for safety measures in its back-to-school plan.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty hard to hear somebody crying poor when they're holding a huge bag of money.
Everybody wants to ensure a safe return to school for kids this fall. And I'd be the first to say that's actually one of the rare examples where taxpayer money is being spent well. But teachers' unions need to stop pretending that this government hasn't spent enough on education. It's spent the most that has ever been spent on education in Ontario, way more than the last government. It's just that most education spending, $4 out of every $5 that goes into education, goes into staff salaries and compensation, and teachers take the biggest chunk. At the very least, we just need to stop the waste, like the $1 million on meetings for hospitality expenses during, you know, negotiations with teachers' unions, when there's a boardroom in every government building in the province.
Yeah, and let's remember who's getting stuck for the bill for all of this stuff. It's kids. They're the ones that are going to end up paying off this debt for years and years and years to come. For a kid sitting in kindergarten today, what's that kid's portion of the province's debt already?
By the end of this year, it's going to hit $27,000, which means that if that child is part of a family of four, that family is going to owe $108,000 as their portion of provincial debt. But an even crazier fact is that in Ontario, the province actually spends more on interest payments on its debt every year than it does on colleges and universities combined. That's why I always say that education advocates in the province should be fierce debt reduction advocates as well. And that includes putting an end to wasteful spending during negotiations with teachers' unions.
Yeah, and listen, we've launched a petition on our website, taxpayer.com. It calls on Doug Ford to bring employee compensation back to the line of reality, somewhere in that neighborhood at least. If you think it's wrong that 1 million government employees in Ontario got a pay raise at the expense of 2.2 million Ontarians who just lost their jobs or took pay cuts during the pandemic, Go over to the website, sign the petition, share it with your friends and family. Let's make some change here. All right. That's a wrap. Thanks for listening, everybody. And thanks to James Wood. All kinds of technical difficulties, and he navigates it, makes it sound some kind of good at the end. Thanks a lot, James.
Hey, please subscribe, like, share, and review our show. It really helps us get the word out to more people, more taxpayers. And of course, thanks again for listening.
Hi, I'm Scott Hennig, president of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. If you've got another minute, I'd like to ask you to think about the one person you know that would really enjoy listening to this podcast. Do us a favor and do them a favor and send them a quick note to let them know about it. At the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, we believe there is power in numbers. That's why we've worked so hard to build an army of taxpayers who are ready to push back. And we did it because people like you shared our work with that one person that they knew would really appreciate taking part. Thanks for listening, and thanks for doing your part to make Canada a better place.